morning, everybody. I'm very surprised to see the DA, given that their party collapsed.
I'm
very surprised that DA is here. Their party is collapsing. And they're here in Parliament. Very brave of the two gentlemen, right?
Other changes were just on time frames, and I have a slide on that.
Just to make the time frame not fixed, but can be changed if there's a reasonable, if there's a reason for it, if it's a rational thing to do. So just to deal with events that you're not foreseeing, and the best example would be the FIFA World Cup, not that it'll come here again or anything like that. But who knows, we might win the World Cup and then the whole country takes lead and we can't table it in the UK. The bill itself, Chair, and excuse me for that, I'd like to take the two perspectives on it, but what the bill does, it does three things for our committees, and I'm leaving out the PBO is included in that. It creates certain institutions. It creates the PBO. It creates, or it requires the creation of rules. So it creates a system for the amendment itself. Then it creates a procedure. And that deals with time frames and who various instruments, legislative instruments, other instruments must be referred to. Therefore, we have the four committees. The procedure, what's interesting there is the and then lastly, what it creates is that it sets up the legislation and mandates of various committees and how we deal with it. And there's, in fact, a very interesting article I can distribute. It was written by one of the advisors to the standing over the, what was then the Portfolio Committee on Finance, Arthur Falsher. Her dad was in fact the first chief advisor of the Democratic Parliament. She wrote an article around about 2006-07, just before or as this bill was done, to deal with issues of sequencing, splitting up the appropriations and the finance parts of the money bills as it goes through a parliament. And these are all based on international practice and so on. So it could be interesting. So let me distribute it. I found it on the web the other day. And I read it and it's a bit late now, but I could exactly see what they're thinking and why the bill was drafted, the act was drafted the way it was. So these are just the mechanisms established by the act that you have to have finance and appropriations committees in the two houses and that they have specific mandates. To keep them apart, so that the functions as well don't overlap and people members can focus on the various aspects. Now, so when it comes to that mandate, I tried to just make this table. When you're looking at acts or legislative instruments regulated by the act, the finance committees, both the select and the standing committee, look at the national macroeconomic and fiscal policy. That's the sort of heading, you almost want to say, of your mandate. So included in that would be your fiscal framework, your revised fiscal framework, which you'll get from the CBPS, or the proposed new fiscal framework. Revenue goals and amendments there too. Committees also to look at the actual revenue published by the National Treasury. That should be part of the NCBPS coming, as well as regular reporting and any other related matters set up in the Act. Well, there's not really anything set up in the Act other than where it's there. And the Appropriation Committee will deal with spending issues in short, and one can go through that list, the Division of Revenue, the Appropriation Bills, the Special Appropriation Bills, Supplementary Appropriation Bills, and so forth. Chair, what I want to add in here is what we see now with the Special Appropriation Bill. It's perhaps is more of a debate than an issue regulated by the Money Bills Act. And the question that has come up in the Standing Committee on Appropriations is, does this bill affect the fiscal framework? Because what the bill is doing is appropriating money, not for this financial year, but the next financial year and the year after that. And whether that has been brought in line or has that been taken into account with the various fiscal frameworks. So, my thinking around that would be when we get the NCBPS, we're looking at the proposed fiscal framework for the outer years, next year's proposed fiscal framework, as well as the ones after that. That is a question that can be in the mind of the committee members to say, well, have we taken into account that appropriation bill? The immediate funds going to ESCOM as well as the SMBC and all of those should be in the revised fiscal framework that one gets with the adjustments appropriation budget, or the adjustments budget, I should say. But there is that area in between which one should be aware of. So it's not as if, well, it's more of a risk in the NA, where the appropriation and finance might not know exactly what's happening. But in the NCOP, there's a lot of sharing of knowledge, so it should be fine, but it's not a watertight area. But when it comes to what you're doing and what you're reporting on, that's supposed to be more watertight than what I've just explained. So that should be focused on what you said in the beginning as well. You should be focusing on revenue issues, on fiscal issues, rather than the appropriations issues, the rand and cent, and whether there's performance in terms of that.
Yeah, can I know people feel I'm badgering this issue, but we have to, this is it. It's all clear. It makes no sense to me. After my having discussed it with the chief whip, with the house chair, and raised it in a plenary we had, exactly the same thing happened. So Paul and Kulilepo thinks of being difficult. No. Then we must change this thing. In other words, move on to this side, appropriations. Let us take a vote. Let's have to go back to one committee. It's just wrong, actually. We must do what the law says. This is starkly clear here. I hope the previous staff are also looking at this, because, you know, I keep asking them, why are we doing this? Like bring, you know, like what they used to do. In finance, they were bringing in the provinces to talk to them about how they're spending their money. So what's the role of appropriations? Right. When I asked the previous chair, he said to me, I have to keep, you know, because he was telling both, he didn't really mind. That's not the issue, I said to him. So he himself said, yeah, we used to do that, but it's wrong. So can we just stick to this thing and pass it as a resolution, and so I can engage with Pindela and, you know, yourself and the staff, and we'll see him and ask him, why do you do this? In any case, once the legislation comes, we have 19 bills that are being processed at the moment, right? I don't think the people in the finance know, particularly apart from nobody knows. They don't know what kind of company does just now. 19 bills are pending. In fact, six of them are in the cabinet process now.
Chair, the end of this month, I think the 30th, we'll get the MTBPS. So I thought I'll make a slide on that. According to the Act, the revised fiscal framework for the financial year in which the statement was tabled, and the proposed fiscal framework for the next three odd years should come to finance committees. As well as the explanations on the macroeconomic and fiscal policy position, macroeconomic projections, and the assumptions underpinning the fiscal framework. On the appropriation side, spending issues, spending priorities in the MTBPS, the proposed division of revenue amongst the three spheres of government, as well as the proposed substantial adjustments to conditional grant allocations, etc., etc. Jerry, I mean, if I can just add on that, the NCOP has a special situation because the membership is shared. But the whole purpose, and it should come out in the article I've distributed, is that you get the members to focus on this side of the finance or that side, so you don't get distracted. And there's good reasons for that, because one is a more long-term issue, and the other one is a performance management issue, almost, if you want to say that.
Can you explain that? I'm a bit lost to us, if you just repeat what you just said.
Well, the reason why it's separated and why the international practice has developed is because on the finance side, when you're looking at macroeconomic issues and the fiscal issues, it has a certain focus. And Eskom is actually a great example to use, because there are people who do not see the long-term effect of it or how it was acted in already or not. So the idea behind it is that we have a committee in Parliament focusing on that area, and there's another committee that will focus on the day-to-day, the rands and cents, and whether there's performance, and whether the money that we're spending, are we receiving value for it. And then these separate reports should go to the House, and then we will see, well, where are we at this point in time? Because we have a long-term view, we have a fiscal view, we have projections on revenue, and we have what we are actually spending today, and whether there's value for money. And in a way, that, in fact, that's the theory. That's the theory, is that therefore you can make proper decisions around the budget and have proper oversight over the budget. But when these things are conflated, I think then you must just do a proper system around that to create space for members as well as public participation to deal with these issues. But it can't be a chaotic area where we think, well, it's just practice that we're dealing with expenditure issues in finance committees as well. I mean, that will focus through, and you've seen it as well with public hearings. People will come and make submissions on the NTBPS, but they will deal with specific expenditure issues that should be in the adjustments budget. Never mind the proposed expenditure issues. So I think it's to keep the
the subject matter clean so that we can deal with it and focus on it to get proper engagement and proper oversight in the end on the budget. That's how I see it.
No, I agree with you 100%, but I think we need to discuss this more because we're having a persistent problem with the powers that be, right? Secondly, what I would urge colleagues, why I'm intervening is I'm not just a chair to say, you speak. No. I'm a facilitator. The second area we'd like you to focus on, and I should have phoned you last week, I apologize, I'm extremely busy on other matters, but what is the specific role of the NCOP, Finance and Appropriations Committee, as against the specific role of the National Assembly Committees? Can you also apply your mind to that as we go through this?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, this is just for more background information. We know there are time frames in the Act. Everything that goes through the Appropriations and Finance Committee, the time frames attached to them. The NDBPS, we must report within certain days. The fiscal framework, there are days in which you must report. Same with the Division of Revenue and Appropriation Bills. But as I said, the amendments have taken all these time frames to say, or as soon as reasonably possible. So if there's a good reason, if there's a proper event that is happening or something that is going to make 2 days longer or 3 days longer, it's not a transmission. This is more of the procedural aspect, and we deal with it when that question comes up. I just want members to be very aware of it so that when a member wants to deal with an amendment or a proposal, and if there are time frames, bring it in time, get the researchers to prepare before the last minute. Sequencing, that's part of the procedure in the Act. Parliament needs to approve the fiscal framework first, which sets the macroeconomic structure, and say within this structure now we can see how we're going to allocate revenue collected nationally within the three spheres of government, that's the Division of Revenue Bill. Once the Division of Revenue Bill or the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill has been passed, Parliament can pass the Appropriation Bill. And that's specifically that you don't have incongruent or inconsistent amendments. You can't make an amendment to the Appropriation Bill or the Adjustments Appropriation Bill at the end that's going to conflict with the fiscal framework that's already adopted or the Division of Revenue that's already adopted. So that's why you have to make an amendment to either Division of Revenue. The Division of Revenue needs to be consistent. That amendment must fit into the fiscal framework. So you can't get new money or new revenue once the fiscal framework has been done. So then move it within what we have. And the same with the Adjustments Appropriation. And that's also based on international practice. When it comes to making amendments, Chair, it's in the Act, it's Section 8.5, subsection 5 of Section 8. These are what I call your principles of fiscal discipline. What's critical to remember here, Chair, and if I may be controversial, I just thought of it the other day, but Kenya has done it. These principles apply to Parliament and Parliament's committees when they take any decision in terms of the Act. Even if you want to amend a revenue bill, these principles will apply. So you must ensure that debt levels and debt serving charges are reasonable and that appropriate balance between revenue and expenditure. Critically, these do not apply to the executive. So if the executive brings
good point.
If the executive brings a special appropriation bill and it does not fit within the fiscal framework, or
it actually
burdens future generations with regard to expenditure. Can happen. In Kenya, it's the other way around. Kenya has a Fiscal Discipline Act which says if you bring the national annual national budget, we want to see that it's complying with all these principles. Nothing prevents, this is the contrary, nothing prevents this Parliament from passing a bill to say when the executive brings legislation, it has to comply with these principles. That's not a money bill in my view. I mean, we can't say it before we've seen the bill, but it can happen like that. We say when you're starting to spend money on X, Y, and Z, you need to apply these principles to you. But critically, as I said, some of the questions I have answered or have to deal with the ESCOM appropriation, if I can call it that, was around this issue. But it does not apply to the executive, so that it's not an issue of legal or lawfulness when it comes to those. It applies to Parliament and its committees. Just quickly, Chair, portfolio committees is just their job, and why it's important is that this committee might see some reports of portfolio or other select, well, not portfolio, not select committees, but portfolio committees dealing with the performance of government departments. And that might lead to having to appropriate more or less depending on the specific situation. And for this committee, the finance committee, what would be important is where will that revenue come from, if that is a policy priority that Parliament has taken up. But via the debate, it would be more of an issue of appropriations. We'll be dealing with the oversight reports with the BRRR that they've called on the various departments and entities. The BRRR chair, I'm not going to say too much about it because it depends only to portfolio committees, but it's just an annual assessment and it forms the basis, and that's only the important point. The BRRR is one of the pillars or the basis in which Parliament will go forth and amend the money budget. And that's because the policy choices made in an appropriation or in revenue belongs to the executive fundamentally. In terms of the constitution, that the formulation and implementation of policy is an executive action. However, if Parliament is not satisfied with the performance or not satisfied with the priorities, based on our oversight function, we can then amend money budgets. And that's the philosophy or the thinking behind the Act. So it could be interesting to just to know what the BRRR is and what should go in there. But it's not critical for this committee to deal with this. Similar with the appropriations, amendments, of course a committee can amend if all the foundation work has been done. There can be an amendment to the appropriations. And it can happen as a proposal, of course, in the NCOP for the Select Committee on Appropriations, because the money budget is Section 70 or 77 and it follows the 75 procedure, NCOP can only propose amendments. You can't actually make that amendment, but you can propose it to the NA and the NA must deal with it. But some of these won't be necessarily around money, and as the discussion is exactly at this point in time around the ESCOM appropriations, it can be to have a conditional appropriation. So you can start attaching conditions to it and then expand on the conditions, what must happen if the conditions are not met. So there's various provisions in the Act that makes provision for consultation, both with the public, between committees, as well as with the Minister of Finance or an affected cabinet member when we are, as Parliament, amending or putting certain conditions to their appropriations or to the revenue collection. So there must always be a consultation process. Those consultation outcomes must be in the report to the Houses. I think that shouldn't belabor the point too much. So maybe this is more interesting, the amendments to revenue. These are the principles that actually came straight from SARS when we drafted the Act. I think it was Mr. Sisson Moore who dealt with it. So it is, obviously, first issue would be that the revenue rate is consistent with the approved fiscal framework and the division of revenue goals. If there's an amendment that we're making, let's say, for instance, we want to bring the rate of VAT down 1%. We'll have to then, as a committee, deal with A to E, ensure that the total revenue is still consistent with the approved fiscal framework. Sugar tax might be a good example, taking to the principles of equity, efficiency, certainty, and the ease of collection. One of the questions that came out there should be ring-fence sugar tax. And SARS said it's not going to be easy to do that, it's not going to be efficient to do that. But this is an example. Consider the impact of proposed change to the composition of tax between direct and indirect taxes. Chair, I should have actually put in my other slides first. People who know everything about this is the PBO, Parliamentary Budget Office. He can advise the committees on what can and cannot go in there and what these principles exactly mean. Because when we're dealing with C, the proposed change to the composition of tax, from what I've heard when we did the Act, and I'm not an expert on it, is that you have to have some kind of balance to get a tax-compliant culture. And if that balance is out, people do feel they pay too much and they earn into less and then people start avoiding tax and not just managing the tax. Not speak on a correction, but I think we are presently in that situation in this country where people are becoming less and less tax compliant. There's more and more efforts with SARS to make people tax compliant. Now, these are issues that must be in the minds of members when we're dealing with amendments to the consideration of international tax trends and the impact on development, investment, employment, and growth. Chair, reporting, as I said, there must be certain, the Act makes provision for certain issues that must go into a report that's going to the Houses, and as you said with the amendment, what we see now in October, there will have to be a report from this committee on the NTBPS, on the areas that come to the Finance Committee, and there will also be a report on the proposed differences in revenue collection, as well as if there are new revenue bills that will be introduced. That's it for information, Chair. We're looking at, this is also just for information, I think that's not going to take the committee anywhere, but if there's a technical, what we're interested in, what is a technical correction? Because we've seen it a few times where the Minister of Finance will come and say, well, there's a mistake in the, whether it's a Tax Law Amendment Act or the a bill or an appropriation bill. The Minister may propose to fix those technical corrections. But a technical correction means that once it's fixed, the meaning of the bill stays 100% the same. It's just a correction. It is not a change of any significance unless one can see clearly that it is in the wrong column or something like that. And a good example, the easiest example, is when we have now after the elections, you have new departments or consolidated departments, and you have to change those schedules in the back of the Act. But that's, again, not a revenue issue. When we dealt with technical corrections in the revenue bill, it was around the sugar tax, when there were certain ways of evaluating or counting how much sugar tax should be paid. And there were a few mistakes in the schedules there, which was corrected in a technical way then. And that simply means that the minister will highlight it, there will be a part of a written report, and then it just affected administratively. Chairperson, the PBO, they will speak for themselves, but what is interesting is just that the chairpersons of the Standing and Finance Committee serve on the advisory board. And the functions of...
And the appropriations.
And the appropriations, yes. Appropriations and finance. And the function is basically twofold. One is to, if there's a vacancy, to appoint somebody in the PBO as an acting director. And when there is a director, in consultation with the director, to work out the conditions of employment and the structure of the PBO. So those are the main functions of the advisory board. So the Act then has some norms and standards for provincial legislatures, which is just basically saying that you have to apply your fiscal discipline, your principles of fiscal discipline, there must be consultation, there must be a separation between appropriations and finance, and the sequencing is. So just those principles that left there. Part of the amendment was to take out the lot in the schedule, which basically was felt infringes on the ability of a provincial legislature to determine its own proceedings and procedures. In other words, how its committees must report and do that. So we've taken that out and left the principles. So that's it from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, PBO. We'll take both because they overlap. Okay, that's okay with me. Look, while you're getting there, let me just report to the PBO and whoever is here. A member of the PBO approached me, saying, look, a director has still not been appointed. The person needs to know that on the very same day, I hope he's listening, the very same day I spoke to the powers that be on the NCOP side, and they agreed. And in fact, on the 22nd, I think you know who is the approaching. There's a meeting to discuss that matter. So the process will begin to move from late October to appoint a new PBO director. Thank you. While we're waiting, I spoke to the co-chair now. I think some of you might know I reported on the Parliamentary Network on the World Bank. This is a parallel structure to the World Bank. It oversees the World Bank and the IMF.
it's not a very strong structure. It should be a strong structure. One of the movers and shakers of the thing was actually Trevor Manuel, who, when he was Minister of Finance, felt that the World Bank deals only with government. Parliament had no role. And even now, we don't have a role. Now, we were not affected before, because we weren't going to the IMF or the World Bank. It was mostly our fellow brothers and sisters elsewhere on the continent and the developing world. So, long story, I'll cut short. When I was serving in public enterprises, I attended a conference with other ANC MPs. I didn't ask for this, let me assure you. I was then nominated to serve on the board. I didn't agree, and it was done. And then they spoke to Gwen Mashlang, who was the deputy speaker, and she said, no, that's you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be the vice chairperson. So I was the vice chairperson of the board, then I stepped down, I offered to another South African, and they rightly said, no, 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 it's not the way it works. Africa, English-speaking Africa chooses one person, French-speaking Africa chooses another. And I think it was a Zimbabwean or a Kenyan or somebody who was replaced to me, as it were. Then, when I came back to Parliament, as it were, as a backbencher in 2014, I was nominated for 2 years in a row. I refused to serve, and then they co-opted me on the floor. I know why. To do the schlep work, okay? So I worked on a big project on making the parliamentary network more effective. So when the thing went to the plenary session in April, I couldn't go because of the election. And the chairperson of the board, who was a British MP, couldn't go because of Brexit. So the issue is back on the agenda next week. And I have to take the board through the paper, and I also get asked to speak or to facilitate. So I've been asked to do that for next week. Now, there are two times in the year that the IMF and the World Bank meet. And what happens is the chairs of the Finance Committee normally go. But some years ago, I fought and agreed that it can't just be the chair of the Finance Committee. It's wrong. Because, you see, they invite the chair of the Finance Committee on each side, and they invite the Speaker and the House Chair. So usually, the Speaker and the House Chair don't go. So Cedric Frolic, and in this case, an outside Joe Munyandi, used to go. So about 4 years ago, Cedric agreed. It shouldn't just be me and Sharp who goes. So we then had a multi-party team that went twice, I think. But that's for the April. The April session draws about 150 MPs from all over the world. The October one is a very small one. It's not a general, what they call a global parliamentary conference. It's a workshop. That's restricted to a few MPs, mostly those who are in the board and those who have been active and new members from parts of the world that have not participated before. So I shall not be here next week. It's been agreed to by the House Chair, Deputy House Chair, and everybody. I meant to speak to my co-chairperson yesterday, but I didn't get around to it. But I have raised it. So next week I won't be here. But on Tuesday and Wednesday I'll be actually, I'll write a formal letter to Kulineko. But the co-chair, wheelchair, in fact, that is an issue that interesting does fall, in my view, and we will discuss it further with the co-chair, actually with an appropriation. So please understand, firstly, that I won't be here next week. I'll be mandated to participate. And I'm a moderator, but now they say I must also participate in other sessions. I often do that. Secondly, that I have no interest in serving on the board. I am not meant to be, I told them already, co-opted this time. I just want to finish my job with them, okay? So next year's April plenary will take the decisions. I will distribute to you the paper. And I think we should negotiate for a multi-party team to go from the NCO. We can't speak for the NCO. So it can be, you know, I can tell you now, from what I gather, the NA is not going. Is that right, Timosani? There's nobody going from the NA, right? Yeah, because there's huge problems about finances now. Parliament's cutting its budget. But I think, because we have not proposed for a study tour from this committee or the Appropriations Committee, am I right, that we should ask the NCO to decide that it should become a norm, that when it happens in April, which is the broader parliamentary conference, it should be at least 3 or 4 MPs, one opposition at least, and maybe 2 ANCs at minimum. Right? Or if we can make it broader, 5, then the quota is 1 PA, 1 EFF, I would imagine, and 3 ANC. So I'm just saying to you that I can only do these things if if you know, if there's a budgetary constraint. And I don't ask to be a facilitator or a moderator, because I've been around for thousands of years. And maybe the prejudices of an English-speaking person towards, you know, you get to do these things. But I'm 63 now, and this is not my forte. Really. And I also want to tell you, I got asked to do a lot of conferences that have nothing to do with my portfolio, but I often don't go. That's to do with my other roles that I play. So I would like us to, without making it too hard and fast, just to note that the chairperson, it's like a mandate. If you give me a mandate, I can go and speak to the powers that be between now and April 1, that we launched the parliamentary network on the World Bank chapter. Dick Levy, remember we had a meeting, I don't know if she came, in the old assembly. We tried to launch a chapter, and then we were stopped from doing so. Because already I had signaled anyway I wasn't coming back, and I thought, hey, you know what, that's another reason to set up a structure so it continues. I would also want to say it's politically very important that we participate in this structure, because the looming specter is that we might end up, our SOEs certainly will, and they are, taking loans. And that has to be overseen by Parliament. This committee, the Finance Committee in particular, because the Finance Committee that deals with the World Bank and IMF. Okay. So I really think strongly we should be encouraged to go. Partly because, I can give you one example. You know, I discovered things about the 4IR. And I reported, every time I go, there's no obligation for a chair, if you're going just to speak, to report. Only if a committee goes, you go report. We will see also if we can take one of the staff members. We did take, on the NA side, because of my fighting, Sakere Eslope once and Antonio once. I think you will recall our reports to the committee. So I really think that it is important for members to go, because the executive sits there for 4 or 5 days. We need to be empowered. And I must tell you, I learned a lot about the fourth industrial revolution and Bitcoin and so on. So, you know, if it's agreeable to the committee, can I be mandated to engage with the powers that be? That should not just be Finance Committee chairs, it be an multi-party team that goes in April, and of course in October it's a very small team. So, is that okay? Any questions people have got? Fine. Yes, fine.
Thank you, Jay. If it's a multi-party thing, then it must be a multi-party thing.
Oh, yeah. I agree. No, I'm telling you how the rules work. The rules work like this. Unless the rules have changed, I'm not in the rules committee. If it's three people, then I don't make the rules. Then you, if you're a work, you must be careful. If it's a multi-party committee, then it's two ANC and one, the strongest, largest opposition. If it's four, then it depends on, we don't decide these things. The chair can go and motivate. But obviously, you did have a thousand of years if I go and motivate. But then the ANC study group has a right to decide those things, not me. Then if it's, what happens is, to make it multi-party, it works like this. Three, two ANC, in this case, because of the DA, well, not for long, right? But for now, two ANC, one DA. Then if you want to make it multi-party, normally the ANC says five, because the ANC has to be a majority. Then it's three ANC, two opposition, the second largest opposition, in this case the EFF. Then it has to go to seven, then it's the EFF. But the way I've done it in the past, up to 2009, you'll be surprised. Funny, I don't want to take up a lot of time, this is not an important issue, right? But just so that I report, no chair does this. I don't know any chair, the physics told me nobody ever writes to board. If they go, you don't even know. I spoke to other chairs. Nobody even knows. Only if it's that. I'm the only one that does this. Let me tell you, my brother. This is what interests you. So I'm making this point because you must realize that no matter who I am, you think ideologically, I'm not a Stalinist. I'm the extreme opposite. But I'm a Gramscian Marxist, if you know what I mean. Let me give you an example. I made a motivation to Parliament that this team goes. So nothing to hide, because I've mentioned this before. So Tony Yangeni comes back and says, no, Peter Smith cannot go, IFP. Remember Peter Smith, anybody? IFP, can't go. So I said to Tony, the chief, I said to my colleague, leader, you see, Peter Smith, he works very hard. He works harder than some of our ANC MPs. He's not a right-wing traditionalist or anything. He's a liberal, right? And the man is contributing all the time. We sit in study group meetings. Countries, Dennis, think about this. Your previous leader really alienated somebody who he will regret, because, you know, I'm very open. Even the study group whacks me now and then. I said, you know, Peter Smith, every time the study group meets, you must realize who you're talking to here, right? My generation is gone. Okay? I would say, what would Peter say on the municipal system? What would Peter say? We would think about my two steps there, because Peter was so fast and so on the ball. We would actually discuss Peter Smith. Not the DA, the IFP, as Gloria Bowman then, right? Just crossed the floor when she couldn't get elected by the DA in Etegmini. So conveniently, she crossed the floor, much to my horror. I'm not going to lie. I said these things in public. No one's interested in this meeting today. Peter Smith, the chief whip said, no, he's always great. I said, but he's the only IFP member there. In course, his language doesn't come. Right? He said, no, it can't happen. So I said, okay, I took you to the study group. Now, I hope ANC members listen. The study group agreed with me that they would forego a place for the ANC to ensure Peter Smith goes. That was a Charlotte Lobby, Obunga, and that group, right? We went back to him and said, no, Peter Smith must go, otherwise we're not going. He said, hey, go, get out of my office. So that's it, me, you're dealing with me. Secondly, I'm the only chair I know in that era who used to like to get invited a lot. You know why? I write. Okay. I write in journals. Right? I'm a writer, meaning I'm a journalist and a sociologist, you know, and English is my first language, right? Now, and globally, that counts, you know? Right, so what I'm trying to say is, I used to get invited and I would rotate. So once I mentioned an ANC member, and the chief whip said to me, hey, who is this guy? So I explained to him who he is. I said, you're the chief whip, you don't know this guy, this is racist. He says, no, you can't go, you have to go. How's he going to go and explain these things? Finally, I persuaded him, and the guy went. So finally, you're going to change the rules. So it has to be 7 people, good luck, because there's no money. Better still, defeat the DA.
You would like that very much.
His father is unhappy about what he just said. Right? So please, don't tackle me on those issues, right? I'm telling you now, I'll do my best. And I'll take the co-chair with me, right? If I lose the battle, we'll make it both a decision on the appropriation. It's one committee. All that happens is this thing evolves, right? The same people, it's really unnecessary to give the wrong committee the thing, because it's exactly the same people. And if you want me to chair the appropriations committee, I will chair it now and then, provided the committee, you know, it makes no difference, right? But let's do it properly. So next week, Dick Lady is up your street. Thanks for agreeing to chair that meeting. I will give you a report back on what's happening. Right. So can we go on now to take the PBO? Right, are you ready?
Yes.
Right. So I've reported on the PBO director. Let's not discuss that matter, please. It's being handled.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, panel members. Good morning, colleagues. We're not attached to the chair anyway.
All right. Yes, I know that. I did the job as instructed by that very day.
Somebody can start the chair. Thank you, Chair. I think just a quick few remarks. I think we like to take the opportunity to come to the committee and, you know, be part of this discussion. Most of that we.
Who are you, by the way?
We.
Fine. I just need you. But I'm so tired of seeing you and Momo. All of you come all the time. Fine.
So I think what we have said at the office, I mean, we're saying we thought this was a very important meeting by the committee to discuss the management of the committee. Because I think, as Advocate James was saying, sometimes the role gets complicated, and it's very important to do emphasize this a lot at the beginning of the term. And we'll keep on also where possible, you know, try to decide some of the roles, because we've seen that sometimes some of the functions get left behind because of focusing on other aspects. So that's why we said we thought it's very important that the committee is having this meeting today, and we're privileged to be here as well. Just a quick one. I think Advocate Jenkins has covered quite a lot of I won't really repeat some of the things that he said, certainly. But I think one of the points regarding the referral letter, Chair, I think when the committee secretary, Gula could mention, telephone conversion, I'm trying to think how does that relate in a way to the finance committee at this level. But I think the issue is that the intergovernmental fiscal relations, tries to link up all the issues of government and other, how they link up and other forums where, somehow the local government, the provincial government, the national government somehow link up with each other, most on the policy side. Because when I thought about, some of the tax issues, take special economic zones, for example, or incentives, largely the way the implementation happens at the municipal level, whereby I looked at one of the previous committee presentations by one of the major metro, they discussed issues around special economic zones and how does that affect the area, the municipalities and so on. And you see that in a way it does touch on the finance committee when they consider tax proposals, need to think about the implications for the respective local areas and what implications that has on local economic development for various. So there is somehow from the conceptual area to think about how you link it up together. Of course, the referral letter talks about the outcomes of the MFMA outcomes, but I mean just broadly, how does the local government link up with the finance committee? You probably want to think about quite broadly in that sense. But if you work on policies or legislation, how does it affect the local government fiscal situation, as it were? But also, in the Section 15 of the Act, it does touch on the unfunded mandate to say, if a policy is approved at that level, does it have implications for local government, which in a way can be discussed in that area. So what I'm saying, Chair and the committee, is that when you think about how you go around this, involving local government aspect of it, look at quite broadly there. Okay, thank you. I'll just continue with the presentation, the outline for the presentation. Of course, just to emphasize at the beginning that the Parliamentary Budget Office, I assume that I'm known, my name is Dumi Sani Chances, the Parliamentary Budget Office. I'm with, we are with the colleagues from the office who will jump in if questions come, we're all here.
Sorry, I don't want to be rude, but the gentleman on the far left there, are you from the Parliamentary Legal Services?
No, I'm from
Legal Services, yeah.
It's a colleague today.
Yeah, but you were not introduced, were you?
No.
Why?
That's my fault, Chair. I forgot to do that. I introduced Barry to the Chair of the Preparations Committee, but then when we started, Ms. Tanjira Tatiana joined us in the last month.
Yeah. Now you look very new.
what you
should be very wary of the person on your right. Eh? He comes across as very calm and so on. But he's an ideologically driven, fanatical Stalinist. Okay, Tony?
I think you like their time.
Yeah.
That's a good
idea.
But yeah. I'm
teasing,
my brother. I'm just here. No. He's a very nice guy.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So we've got a team which will jump in, and we're all here. Yes, I mean, the budget office was created, support committees, finance committees included in implementation of the Act. And of course, we've done that by, presenting some briefs and also by listening, taking the committee's request, PBO check this for us, how does it means for the legislation and so on. So we're here and we always emphasize that we'll always be here to support the committee. Of course, the Act, as Advocate saying, was came into effect in 2009, but there were some changes and the rules and it prescribe what should finance and other committees do in relation to money bills and what some of the roles of other sectors as advocates say. I think what I wanted to quickly jump on, I used Advocate Jenkins' framework there, but just to zoom in to say under those topics, where are some of the information that the committee should get to try to address some of the issues that they need to look into. In February, which is when the budget is presented, some of the specific requirements of the committee, finance committees, are those there, look at the microeconomic policy, fiscal policy, and tap down micro review, provide the committee with the issues taken into account, and there's tablet fiscal policy as well, which the committee, you know, got to look into in detail if they are to respond to the requirements there. Also the revenue and tax proposals chapter, which deals with some of the issues related to the income, which the committee is required to look into those as well. But also on debt and also fiscal position of state-owned companies as that talks to the debt or contingent liabilities, which are also the responsibility of the finance committees within the committee, within Parliament, both finance committees. Also going down to the fiscal framework, what information, where information you get that deals with fiscal framework and which the committee will take into account. So I think what I'm trying to just zoom in, the chair, members, say where are some of the information that you use in relation to deal with some of the issues. But I think what also at the MTPS, which is October as well, we zoomed in, so these are the chapters away. In these books, you can find information that aligned to the finance related work or oversight work, you know, and so on. But I think, you know, it's quite explanatory there, just to direct you there. But I think also, I don't think that we thought we should also do just provide some description or, you know, make some of these concepts more accessible, just to explain them, you know, say, what, I mean, the committee will look at micro-controls, what does that mean, you know, which really is very hence to saying it's important for this meeting for members to also try to discuss what does that mean. I mean, micro-controls, you refer to the government's approach in understanding the global and domestic.
Can I suggest, especially for new members, these are terms we're going to be using for the next 5 years, right? So can you go through it slowly, explain to us, even to me, what exactly each term means? Is that agreeable? So we go through it slowly. Because we throw these words around, and often we may not, and to be fair to new members. So, you know, they're not got a PhD and they haven't got your experience. Or my long-term role in Parliament. So let's go for this. First one, explain what economic interference are. Plainly simply.
Yes, I think, economic overview is when, you know, when you get to chapter one or chapter two of the budget where the government or the Minister of Finance will explain what are some of the developments in the national economy and domestically as well, and what are some of the mechanisms that have been put in place for government to try and influence the, you know, the space and so on. So in a way, when there is economic growth or lack of growth on whatever issues, you know, government to try to explain that, you know, to the committee or to Parliament, these are some of the issues, or to the country, these are some of the issues that are taking place and this how it will affect economy in South Africa or different regions, but also how does that implicate, how does that affect the public finances? Because more largely, you know, we rely heavily on taxes, you know, imposing taxes on the economy to generate revenue, and you know, so we try to explain it. So obviously, what also comes important is when you understand those factors in the oversight process or when you do the report on macroeconomic policy or fiscal policy will take into account, but this has been in place, what has government done to try and influence this, what has government not done, and so on, just to give that sense in that sense. So as part of the finance committee requires to look at that, oversight over that, you know, in a simple term, oversight over macroeconomic situation in the country. And the next issue there looks at the macroeconomic policy, which is a tool then used by government to try to influence, you know, this macroeconomy, overall economy, to try to help government, you know, attain its strategic objectives or whatever, like your employment, more growth, and so on. So there's a macroeconomic overview, and government uses a macroeconomic, you know, policy or strategy to try to influence that in the favor of what government has achieved over time. So this is some of the things that the finance committee will look into, you know, during the budget or during the even during the year when the government reports and provides this feedback thereof. And microeconomic policy includes taxes that we impose, that you want to know under how does these taxes we impose, how does it link up into the wider economy, what are the implications
some of the taxes or government spending. If government spent more or less, what would it mean for the economy? You know, it means more demand, there won't be demand, and so on. But also looking at widely, how does that affect other factors that play in the role of exchange rate and the monetary policy and so on. So that's sort of looking at the overall at over level there. I mean, I put that there just simply trying to make it more simple. But of course, this sort of debate around these concepts, you know, how they link up. You know, but I'm just trying to simplify it as much as possible for the committee. Fiscal policy, of course, is one of the instruments within the microeconomic policy that government expresses its how it wants to realize, you know, the macroeconomic objectives, to say what are the deliberate measures they put in place. We're going to spend more on infrastructure, and this will enable broader economic activities, or we're going to impose lesser tax or more tax and so on. So that's what the fiscal policy goes. Fiscal policy include looks at the expenditure, revenue, and debt levels that the government want to have or to impose over the next 3 year period. And of course, such expression of fiscal policy come in the fiscal framework where you show this a level of we've expressed ourselves in the fiscal policy, and these are the specific levels of revenue or debt or expenditure which we want to have over the next 3 years, and what are some of the factors that are affecting how each one will turn out, and estimating largely, which is based on the fiscal policy. But also the other instruments, macroeconomic instruments, is the monetary policy. You know, also one of the instruments that's debated a lot, which largely short-term stabilizing measures taken by central banks to manage the size and growth of the money supply of the economy. You know, of course, they gotta be objectives, you know, which many countries have, is an objective of our macroeconomic monetary policy, and how this links up with the macroeconomic policy, and look at the to influence the economy as a whole, ensuring certain objectives are realized thereof. And also, you know, there's tax, you're required to look at taxes and revenue proposals as decisive what government use to raise money, you know, what measures they impose in the individuals or in corporate taxpayers and other mechanisms to raise state money. And of course, that links well back to the broader macroeconomic strategy that is in place. And lastly, the tax expenditure, which is, as I was saying earlier on, the mechanism imposed or put in place by government to say, look, we're trying to encourage more more investment, for example, in the economy. Let's give concessions to this business. It's more of a revenue foregone. Now, we could have raised this revenue, but because we're trying to encourage more growth or more employment or deal with some of the issues in the fiscal area, let's foregone another revenue. So, hence we call it tax, which I think I'm trying to be very simplistic. I hope it's making any justice. So I think we wanted to highlight this at a high level today. When the committee considers the MGPS, all these budget presentations, or all the money bills, or any related matters presented by government, at least it gives you some measures to understand what does this mean and how does it link up quite broadly with the mandate of parliament or committee in this regard. So lastly, we thought also, Chair, we should also just put out there what we do also to support the committee as well. As the Act, it is quite specific that our role is to support the committee. If there's an issue that you want to do, want to address, you can send to us. And what we have done, we have sort of established or developed regular briefings, and also we also make space for more requests from the committees or from members in the committees to say, look, there is a discussion around incentives on small businesses. Is how far is it achieved, and whatever, and we can do quick analysis and send this committee. Now, this is how we do it. So we make that space to allow such requests during the period thereof. So one of the main outputs is the pre-budget and pre-MGPS briefs. So what we do, we're currently working on one now. What we do, just before the minister presents the budget in February, or before the minister presents the MTPs and revised framework and adjustments, we provide committees or parliament for joint committees with state of some of the economic issues that which largely talks to finance committees, and also what are some of public finance outcomes to what at that point in time. And in a way, we empower the committee when they listen to the minister, they want to link it up and say, but hang on, these are some of the issues that we thought will be addressed or that we also recommend will be addressed in the future. So that's sort of empowering the committee, the members before the briefs, before the minister's briefing. And then even subsequent to the brief by the minister, we do another analysis which also now look at the presentation by the minister itself and provide further analysis based on either what we've said before in the brief or sometimes take into account specific concerns from the committee. So look, we've listened to the minister. These are some of the issues that we want us to advise on the Parliamentary Party office in this regard. But also, we have policy analysis where we look at the national development plan, the implementation of it by different sectors or departments and so on. And we've done so much work since in the last term, but now we'll be satisfied that as a detail, as one of our regular views in terms of looking at how far is which mechanism, which targets have been achieved, or whether there's a proper alignment between the budget and the NDP the targets, and how far has that been realized, or any challenges within the system, also report that. We further have briefs where we provide quarterly economic briefs. We have done the first one, and also working on the other one, where we give the Finance and Appropriations Committee status of economic performance, look at specific sectors and specific factors within the economy that, what has been happening in this quarter and what are some of the challenges that members need to be aware of, so that when they look at the government proposals, they take that into account. We also provide the fiscal brief, which also provide status of how far is the public finance outcomes versus the budget or the estimate that we put out in the budget or in the NQPS. I've also been looking at comparing estimate outcome of revenue by government and saying, looking at the historical performance of some of these revenue instruments, what are some of the potential outcomes we should at this stage October expected to not realize the revenue targets by the end of the year, and of course that empowers the committee to have more hands-on approach towards the end of the year. How do we strengthen that, or what does that mean for the fiscal objectives and so on? But also brief on specific issues on taxes. It's a big issue. I advocate Jenkins mentioned there's been a lot of discussion on tax issues because trying to balance how the government raises revenue, but also how it doesn't perpetuate inequality in society, and how to balance that thing. But we have given some brief on some specific tax issues. Basically, what we're saying, the committee can request us, can brief us on the specific issue on tax, or what does it mean, and so on. And of course, it's a broader open up to say we will also be willing to get some of any additional requests from the committee on how to advise on how to take the matter, especially the matter which has money bills, early finance implications thereof. Lastly, Chair, we just want to give a bit of a brief what we're currently working on, which will be part of our pre-brief, which is happening on 29th. It's normally a joint committees. Four committees where we brief you with this, but also we come on at a stage. And of course, we will certainly touch on some of the local government issues there. But I think we've said we'll present some of the major metros fiscal situation, how it looks like, and some of the key issues that relate to finance or profession, raised in the Municipal Financial Management Act AG audit there. I think think that's what we wanted to cover. I don't know if I left anything, but I think yeah, we can take questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Look, I think this has taken the discussion forward and simplified matters a bit. So over to the members. Mr. Ryder, Dennis, since you wanted this session, yeah.
Thank you very much, Jay. I would appreciate the presentation. So like you said, it has taken us a lot forward. I want to ask if I'm being oversimplistic in my analysis. As far as I can establish and have established, is that the roles of finance and appropriations are kind of split along the old-fashioned roles of how a family manages its finance, where you've got one party who's responsible for the income and kind of the management of the money, and the other party is responsible for the expenditure of that money. So, you know, maybe it's coincidental we've got a man on one side and a woman on the other side. That's on a lighter note, Chair. But is that analysis being oversimplistic? And I think perhaps if I'll take that analogy, it probably makes sense then why there are so many overlaps between the two departments, because in a normal family environment, one would have many different decisions, discussions, etc., etc. But yeah, just to appreciate the presentation, Chair, I don't really have much more to add. Thank you.
Anybody else? Polly? Okay. Can I raise a few questions? Esther, yes. By the way, the staff, especially our new colleague, you can speak after members have spoken, unless there's an objection to it. We allow the staff to speak, including you, Nicole. You know, in the committees would be serving. We don't have a problem. Yes, over to Esther. Oh, did somebody else? Oh, of course, here.
Yeah.
No. Oh, and Zicaleri, yeah. Okay, if you're so shy and quiet, and don't lift your hands, it's not my fault. Okay, thank you.
Whoever he is. If people put their hand up like this, how much food? And you, the traditional leader, not me, I'm your subject, so why are you?
No, Chair, I just wanted to ask the question that with all these presentations, the way that they are made, they don't talk to transformation whatsoever. They're silent. And I just wonder if that is deliberate, that when you talk finance and appropriation, you don't have to talk about that. We have a developmental plan. And if you look into these documents and these presentations 5 years ago and 5 years later, to me I get a sense that you still get the standard format, that they talk like this and they are silent, and they are even talking to a society that doesn't have this background that we have. And I think that is problematic, and I think it's high time for the officials. I know that it's our role when I'm doing the politics, but I mean, they live in a country wherein they know the social background and the impact that we have to make as this community to change the landscape of even our expenditure pattern in the country. So that's a critical question I want to ask without really elaborating, Chair. Why are they so silent to this?
Your question is, why are we so silent? Oh. So it's worth me asking to yourself. It's not really an executive bill, it's our bill of rights. So your question really is, why are we so silent on these things in our own world, our acts, right?
That's another level, Chair. We have already communicated what we want to see happening in the country. For instance, Advocate Jenkins says that when executive bring legislation here, listen to that statement. It's a problematic statement. Yeah. Should the executive really bring legislation here, or should they bring proposals more for the direction?
I think he meant draft legislation. We use that word, you know, but I don't know if I agree with you. But the point I'm making is this is the one of two acts that we as Parliament have passed, not the executive. So it's we who've been errant. Your question is a good one. But I'm saying it's one of the questions you can't put to the executive, you can put to ourselves. Why have we, as MPs, not done that? That's all I'm saying.
question is valid. It's been directed at the executive, but really should be directed at us. We just amended it 18 months ago. And why didn't we do that? Well, I can give you answers to that, but I'll see what they have to say. It's a political question. It's not a technical question.
Yeah.
But if they want to comment, they can, and then I will come in and try to reply to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Shepherdson. And maybe I must say that I'm honored to be seated next to the celebrity, to rub shoulders with the celebrity. And I hope those who have seen him, when they see him, they are not getting thirsty.
Yeah.
You hardly watched him. You shouldn't have.
I know him.
You
I
saw
know the
that.
Coach of the nation. I didn't see him now, but I've seen him before many times, including in this parliament. Weren't you here in 1994 when Dick Lady was still in the nappies? Please, don't start with me. I spent a whole week with him in Palestine.
Chair, I just want to join the other members by appreciating the presentation and say also to your leadership that thank you, because we've been postponing this and we have agreed in our induction workshop that it should be a continuous thing to empower us. And very important issues that have been raised by both the Advocate Jenkins and Dr. Judge. The thin line in terms of roles between appropriation and finance committee. And it's a good thing that the two committees are regulated by what is this? The Money Bills Act. And I think it's clear that's what we wanted to get, our roles. Because at some stage, there's this overlapping. Just what Honorable Karen said, Jefferson said about the item that comes next week, Tuesday. From the presentation, it is an expenditure matter. And that is something that should be dealt with by appropriation. But it makes no difference because we are the same people. But it's also important that we should understand who should do what, even if we are the same role players. And I think it's a process we are learning. We are new here in the SOP with all your experience. You are in a new environment. But with your experience, I think we will learn from your experience. It will help us. I just want to appreciate that at last we were able to find space within our congested program to be able to get this session. I really appreciate it. It's very important to me to understand what is expected of me. Thank you.
Okay, can I raise a few questions, and if anybody else wants to come in, it's fine. Firstly, I want to thank both the presenters, because I really think they were both very good presentations. Now, the first thing is, some of these questions, when I put it to you, I'm doing it because I think it might be of some value to other members. But at the same time, it also helps me to clarify my own thinking. Because as the co-chair is sort of hinting at, not only on this side, we see things we didn't see before. But firstly, I think the co-chair has covered me. Basically, we are two committees that are mutually dependent on each other, right? We have to cooperate, even if, like in the NA, you have two different sets of members. The advantage we have here, which is what I think the co-chair is hinting at, is the same members. The truth is, as the co-chair herself would say, when we're in the NA, it's the two chairs that have a lot to do with each other. And it depended on the personalities. But the committees, didn't work very closely together. In fact, in several reports we said, in our annual reports, BRRRs, our assessment of the budget, we would say the two committees need to work together, where possible, co-chaired. But it didn't happen, actually. I know that's my view, the co-chair might have her own view. But here, what she's implying is that it's easier because we're the same people, we just have the chair changes. I mean, sometimes Vicky is not feeling up to chairing, it's not a crime. She can ask me or Comrade Mujatu as the would preferably him, actually. And in my case, I think also we should encourage, instead of us, my asking you to chair when you're not available, I think we should encourage other people to chair. So we should rotate the chair, as we did in local governments and public enterprises. So I think that's a matter we need to discuss in our own work, study groups. But I would like to encourage, and I'm sure the co-chair agrees, because, you know, broadly we agree on things. And that's great, because then it means the relationship is stronger than it otherwise would be. Though she does boss me around. Don't think that I'm the stronger personality, but, you know, the quiet bossing of my friend there, don't underestimate it. All right, so basically, come back to the point before I digress as usual. The point here is that, you know, what both of you have done, you set out very clearly our respective roles. The problem isn't so much here, the two of you need, you've got to communicate it on that side, but the problem occurs here because of the previous chairperson chairing both. So I don't think you get it that side. Okay, the next issue then is a specific role of the NCOP and NA. You know, my dear colleagues, I'm glad you're the ones that are thinking on this, we are replicating a lot of things that the NA does. And I would like both you and the PBO, Abbott Jenkins, your team and this team to someday give us a one-pager on what exactly is our role as the NCOP, let's call it finance family. And it must also go to other committees. We just seem to do replicate and duplicate. That is why I've said this. I'm empathetic with ministers of state. We do the same thing there. Then we come back and just change a few words and we do the same thing here. You know, when I was in the executive, there were constant complaints. Now, I think you might want to help us, both of you. I mean, both of you are in both teams that I am. What is the specific role of the NCOP when it comes to money bills? Firstly, why are there Section 75 bills? All money bills, right? Which means we have a very limited role. Now, my own view is that if it's a Section 75 bill, we should apply our mind, but not as strongly as a Section 76 bill. In terms of the Constitution, that's the way I see it, Advocate Jenkins and your colleagues. I mean, the Constitution says that where it affects the functions and powers and role of the provinces, then the NCOP has a major role. Mm-hmm. But where it doesn't, we must apply our mind, but realize it's not as important as the Section 76 bill. If this is correct, does it not imply that our role in the budget is a limited one? And if so, why is that the case? And why should we kill ourselves on that when we should do other things that are complementary to what the NA does? Then the third question is it correct to say that we first look at the division of revenue so that we know how much of money we are allocating to each sphere? It's after that that we look at the appropriations. So we know 60% or 50% is going, say 45% is going to the national, 40% or, you know, 45% went to the provinces and 10% to say arbitrarily to local government. It's only after we know what we're giving to each sphere that we decide what is going to happen at the national sphere, which department gets what. Is that correct? Next thing. I like what you said, Advocate Jenkins, that the executive must also apply the same criteria that are set out in the money bills for us to make amendments, and yet they get away with it. Would it not also be a theory that we are ultimate arbiters? So even if they haven't done it, we are supposed to check all these things. But in the very first instance, shouldn't we be asking, I'm so sorry that you can be, because, you know, I mean, this is really her area than ours here on the finance side. the executive must also be asked to meet the criteria. So when they come with the ESCOM appropriation bill, I see she's coming in now, but I'll speak to her after the meeting. When it comes to the ESCOM appropriation bill, you know what, a lot of the things here fall more under the committee you chair, but it's something it's very important you in particular, you know, decide on to provide some leadership in that regard. But you see, the point he's making, declare we never thought about before, that we are required, if we're making an amendment to a money bill, to meet the strict criteria 8 in Section 8 and in your case Section 10, right? The criteria that are set up. And we've complained before that this is a ploy at one level by the executive to ensure we can never make changes because it's so hard to do it. We don't have the capacity yet. I mean, imagine Esther and my colleague there and others there trying to match the team from Tirol with all the international training and all the skills and expertise, the 40 or 50 people who work on the budget thing, right? I mean, we've got 2 people here on their side, right? Against the 40 that are there. So balance of power is just uneven. Yet, they have now come with a bill, he says, like most of them, where they don't set out whether they met those criteria, in this case 11.5 or whatever it is. So the first thing we should ask them is, can you produce in a 1-page or 2-page how you've done all these things? I think both committees, appropriations committee, should do that if we haven't already done it. The next point is, can you explain to the committee why we do be super hard on our side? I mean, what is the point? Esther's laughing, but he's like, what's the point? The NA is met, they've exhaustively looked at this thing, they've written the report, and with a Section 75 bill, why do we have some committees? When I ask the powers that be, let me tell you my brother, Advocate Jenkins, they laugh, most of them. Yeah, you're right, and then nothing happens. Nobody says, you know, you're talking nonsense. I like it when people tell me I'm talking nonsense. Because then you learn and grow. Even if you're not talking nonsense, at least you have to think, hey, what am I talking nonsense to then argue? What I'm trying to say is, nobody wants to respond, including technocrats I've spoken to. I ask them, why are they doing this thing? Yeah, I got complete talk. That's all that I have to say. Which makes me deeply suspicious. Actually, maybe I'm right. I was asking it more as a question. Hey, I've had enough now. If the committee agrees with me, we must do something. I must get a mandate from the committee and say, we discuss the matter. Why is it that people are doing B-triple-R on our side? We don't do it, the two committees. I ask them why we don't do it. They say, no, you're too busy. I mean, very objective criteria. So, why do we do them on our side? What is the point? Then, what is the relationship between the B-triple-R and the MTBPS? In the real world that we come from, Vicaletti and me, usually the B-triple-R is presented to the speaker and the other side, I don't know what happened to the other side, about 5-6 days before the MTBPS. How is it meant to influence the MTBPS? When I asked this a few weeks ago, I was told, no, it's not supposed to influence the MTBPS. It is supposed to influence the budget. Yet the MTBPS provides a framework of the February budget, right? So, I asked, you remember Vicaletti, we said, let's bring forward the date of the annual report to the end of August instead of end of September. So we have more time to process all these things when you're on the NA side, and we can deliver the B-triple-R at least 3 weeks before. Although the truth is the MTBPS is already shaped by the time, you know, even by that time. So the question again is, what is meant to be the outcome of the B-triple-R? Is it meant to influence the MTBPS? And if so, it doesn't do it, obviously. Or is it meant to influence the budget? Now, I don't remember, Advocate Dicaletti, what happened, but last year when we tried to get the date of the submission of the annual reports to the end of August, there was a huge fight back from Treasury. And then we just gave up and said, when I went to the office at Chief Work and raised it, he was a bit like, said, just leave it, you're right. So one of the issues we have to look at when we're amending the bill this cycle, by the example, is to look into that. The arguments they use, if I remember, Advocate Jenkins was, that our corporate will also deliver in September, and, you know, 6 months from the time the PFMA says it and all that, but can you remind us why we couldn't move it to August? There's another practical, our people are listening because these issues, there's no answer. None of us as an individual can provide answers to. We need fresh minds here. Okay? The thing is, they said, okay, even if we deliver it by the end of August, Parliament does break up in the middle of September because of the school holiday. And we're not going to change. So even if we get it by the end of September, by the time Esther and my friend there are doing the reports and so on the NA side, the equivalent, I don't know what happens to the NCOP, so I'd have to ask them. Then, you know, it's too late. Anyway, it's holidays or constituency time, school holidays, and then we're going to come back in early October anyway, or late September. Then the next point. I'm saying, well, if you don't want answers to them, I want us to all mull over it because these are things we'll have to apply our minds to. And we need to speak to our colleagues on the NA side. Then, on the issue of consultation, just to remind you, even though we made changes to encourage public consultation, in our report on the amendment we said we need more consultation, more time for the public. And that might have first we applied to. Then on the sequencing and timing, I think we will come back to this. I don't want an answer on it. It's still not adequate time. Then, but the problem then is Parliament will sit till mid-December, and we will sit maybe till Christmas Day, you know, because we have to end later than the NA side. So that's not going to happen. So do you see what the difficulty with this whole bill or act? Why am I calling it a bill? It's an act. It's the sequencing. Problems are we get the annual reports. I'm taking Parliament as a whole, not the NCO. We get it at the end of September. End of August is out because of all these things, right? Then, if you extend the time of the MPBPS, it means you're going to run into middle of October, middle of December. Then, quarterly meetings. The PBO does quarterly meetings. Can we agree that the two chairs here will speak to the two chairs on that side, that we have joint briefings, like we're going to do with the South African Reserve Bank, we have joint briefings on it. But in the meanwhile, the PBO, you're going to go and meet the National Assembly chairperson. Let's be honest. The way things are structured, although we are two complementary houses, they take the bigger burden of certain of these things. If we organize, so you go and speak to the two chairs that side, that you're going to give joint quarterly briefings that we discuss, and we will speak to the chairs. The four committees will meet with you, yeah, because we don't discuss your report. We've agreed the Reserve Bank will do it at least twice a year. So we should also do PBO. But then the quality of your reports also have to be upgraded, right? Then on the issue of PBO, I liked that you sought to give definitions. Okay. Then on the questions, you will respond to them, and I'll come back on the one that was raised about why do we not say things about transformation. Finally, since we are talking about finance matters, and since Comrade Ashlangu, your privilege falls under you. I want to show you something. Look at this pen, right? Look at you. When you try to write, it comes out. Now, a senior staff member gave me this pen to make my notes. Firstly, that person is half my age. I use a computer and a cell phone to make notes. He or she, whoever it is using a pen. First problem in the 40th Industrial Revolution. 63-year-old using computer and cell phone. 16-year-old is using a pen. Point one. Point two, particularly when you look at the appropriation, despite the budgetary constraints, can you increase the salary of one committee secretary? Because the poor fellow missed the quality of his pen. Thank you.
Okay, over to you, African Jenkins. Thank you.
Try
writing with you, it's still about the way you're keep putting it back. Okay.
Chair. I think it was another omission. I first forgot to introduce my new colleague, Mr. Tatiana. He needs to go to another committee.
Tatiana.
Maybe my pronunciation is not to be followed, but it's
Andile.
Right. It's
Andile from my old battle, but what is it?
It's an Eastern European setting.
Sorry? It's a European. Sounds like one,
He must excuse himself. Chair, and I forgot to deal with that specific question. What's the role of the NCOP in the budget process and then the Select Committee on Finance specifically? And I've just quickly looked at
the appropriations.
When we're dealing with something like the fiscal framework that comes with the budget, the revised fiscal framework that will come with the adjustments budget, or then the NCBP is the proposed fiscal framework for the outer years. The Act envisages there that the finance committees, in any event, act together. They have a joint briefing, joint public hearings, and then the reporting within the specific time frames. The difference, though, is that the Constitution says the NCOP is there to represent provincial interests at a national level. So that is what one needs to unpack. And I think I've mentioned it before, there was a member who was in the, I think he was in Parliament, and then he moved to Free State, Mr. Van Rooyen. And he made a very strong point when we drafted this act all the time. And he said it's critical that provinces or provincial interests are brought up when we're dealing with the NCBPS. Because that report on the NCBPS, the minister needs to respond to that. But when the fiscal framework is fixed, even before the budget is presented, when Treasury's operations are kicked into place and they fix the fiscal framework or they bring the fiscal framework to us in the budget, it's very difficult for provinces to have any impact at that stage on the fiscal framework. And that fiscal framework will affect the money that they receive, it will affect the division of revenue, so it will affect what they get out and how they can then meet their policy priorities in their own budget, in the provincial budget. So my thinking is that the role of the select committees is to really look at what is happening at provincial level and actually to facilitate that process. Because yes, the budget is a national process, it's a centralized process, but it does affect provinces as well as municipalities. The NCOP has solved it within it. So that, I think, is that, so the focus needs to shift. There shouldn't be unnecessary repetition. I would totally agree with that statement. And the focus should be, is there provincial issues that needs to be taken into consideration when we're looking at the proposed fiscal framework now at the NCBPS, and then when we're looking at the fiscal framework? Because the Act is catching up. If you read that article, I've distributed it in Kululeko, I send it to you, you can distribute it. It is really when we're dealing with a state system that we have, which is a parliamentary system, and to answer that question, yes, in terms of the budget, they will bring you the budget, not a proposed budget, the executive. In the parliamentary system, unlike the US, we get the budget in a format. It's cast, not in stone, but it's cast in a bill already. And they bring it and they say, this is what we want to do. And in the United States, it works, the president in the presidential system, I should say, they'll bring proposals. And then Parliament or the Congress looks at this and they say, well, we're going to shape it a bit like this and a little bit like that, but we drop the budget in the end. That's how I understand the two different systems. But I'll get more back to your question. It's just that when we're looking at what the role of the NCOP is and then the select committees on appropriations and finance, it's critical that those issues come through. I don't know what happens within Treasury and whether some of these issues are taken into consideration, but the day-to-day operations is different to the census we get every few years. Provinces might have different needs that's not really seen on a paper level, and you need that public participation, you need provincial legislatures to come forward to say this is what we're experiencing, and then the NCOP to put it at the national level. So that's just trying to put it in short what the role of the NCOP in the budget process is. I'm going to get back to the other questions of Mr. Karim at the end. I just want to deal with the issue of transformation. I think it's a very good question, Chairperson. I think what I wanted to say at one stage during my presentation is two things. First of all, we try to, as advisors, to not to support or not support a certain policy position. That's not really our job. And we're supposed to be independent, or at least impartial, and so forth. So, however, the Constitution says very clearly in Section 195 that public service must be developmental orientated. So we have a role to play, but it's not our primary role. What I wanted to add to when I did my presentation is to say that it's one thing to look at what are the policy priorities of government and to debate it, but one must never lose sight of them. And this is what the former director of the PBO said, I think, as during his first few times I met him and we had these workshops on the money bill.
is that a lot of the budgetary issues and budget priorities are set up in the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights says, provides that you have to provide funds for various socioeconomic rights. Then it further, or goes further and says there must be a progressive realization of these rights, which is open to interpretation. But the most simple interpretation of that is that looking at inflation, there should be additional expenditure on certain socioeconomic areas, like health, like education, to until it gets to a level where you say, well, there's no need for that progressive realization story. But the whole point of South Africa including what they call justiciable socioeconomic rights, in other words, socioeconomic rights that can be enforced in the court of law, and it has been enforced in the court, in our courts, is to say you can't deliver housing or education to everyone at the same time as soon as this constitution is coming into effect. So there must be a progressive realization. Now, Parliament is supposed to monitor that, and we get assistance from the South African Human Rights Commission. One looks at section 184 of the constitution, it says that the Human Rights Commission must annually submit a report to Parliament looking at the progressive realization of the socioeconomic rights. Now that is something that can make a budget, if you ask me an academic, it can make a budget stand or fall in the eyes of court. Because a budget needs to give effect to that. Budget the priority that's finding its way into the budget should be aligned to the constitutional provisions. The other challenge is that the Human Rights Commission is doing that on an annual basis. Way back in 2001 and 2002, quite close contact with them, and I was working for an NGO, and we always monitored that part as well. But it is something that's still there, it's still provided for in the Constitution. So one must look at that. And that is one step towards development, I would argue. It's trying to redress a lot of misspending and wastage and the effects of apartheid of the past, but it's not the whole point of transformation, of course. But at least at that level, we as advisors can participate in that debate without showing any bias. Chairperson, yes, where the budget, the money bills are usually Section 75 bills. The difference of 75 or 76, Constitutional Court had said it's just the level of public participation. I won't say the bill is less important for the NCOP, but certainly the level of public participation does not have to be as intense as the MA. So it does show that the focus is within the National Assembly. That's when we're dealing with the appropriation bill, adjustments appropriation bill, and so forth. When we're dealing with the Division of Revenue, that's a 76 bill. So that has to go to provinces, and there should be public hearings at provincial level as well. So there is a limited role for the NCOP, and it needs to be with the resources getting scarcer and scarcer, I want to say, one needs to actually define that role and find it so that you can have effectiveness and efficiencies. Otherwise, there will be duplications, which is tantamount to wastage of money at certain points. The issue, as I indicated before, the division of revenue bill, why do we need to pass it first? It's because then we know exactly how much national can deal with, and provinces, if one looks at section 120 subsection 3, provinces must also have provincial legislation to set the procedure, to provide for a procedure to amend their provincial money bills. So it's also important for them that the division of revenue bill is passed before they get their own appropriation bill and can deal with how they can change that. So that's just my input on that, Chair. The issues of fiscal discipline, it was there. I think I don't need to say too much about it anymore, but it is a thing that some countries have looked at. The most obvious example is the European Union, that has that 3% deficit margin, or margin of appreciation, which means that you can be an overdraft of 3% because it's the thinking is that at least that would be a capital expenditure which will encourage financial growth or economic growth within the country. So it's okay to take debt as long as it doesn't become a current expenditure.
but Chair, these are the experts on those things, but that's how I understand those issues. The NCOP Chair, the select committees, they're not required to make BRRR reports. I know that there's been some push from the NCOP to say we are able to do it well. Chair, that it's not required in terms of the Moneyballs Act. The BRRRs, yeah, they're usually after, in terms of the Act, after the MTBPS is tabled, but before we pass the MTBPS. So I think there's always been a problem with time frames there, Chair, and what we now have is that the Minister, when he introduces the budget in February, needs to respond to both reports on the MTBPS and on the BRRRs to say why certain recommendations to increase or decrease funding should or should not be acceded to. And that's the system we're in at the moment, but nothing stops a portfolio committee to do an additional BRRR with the information at hand, because there are what's called the Section 32 reports. That's Section 32 of the Public Finance Management Act, which is actual expenditure. I'm not sure if it's tabled in Parliament, but it's certainly published in the Government Gazette as well as on the website of National Treasury. So a portfolio committee can track the expenditure of a department month to month and make a budgetary review recommendation report when that committee feels it's correct. The House should in fact pass that and send it to the Minister to respond to as well. I don't think it should be treated any differently. It's an option, but as it is at the moment, the BRRRs do not directly affect the MTBPS.
And they should, shouldn't they?
It could help. It certainly could help at Minister.
Okay.
Because sometimes, I think, Chair, personally, that because we're dealing with an annual budget cycle, we almost look in silos at each year. And we forget sometimes that there's been BRRRs about a certain department. If I can just think of an example, water and sanitation, I haven't read their BRRRs, but the investigations into certain problems, governance problems within the water boards, has been there for a few years. And we seem to somehow just focus on the year, that BRRR, the Minister is going to respond to that, and we forget to look at the trends. The trends can be seen when we're looking at the reports from the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, for instance, because they only deal with the auditor's financial statements. So for them, they see the trends and they get their presentations from the Auditor General about the trends, whether this department is having less or more qualifications in its audit reports. So that's something that one can look at. And that, Chair, we don't really need anything other than to talk to each other to get some of these things done. Both from the administration and politician side, to get what's happening within the Standing Committee on Public Accounts and Portfolio Committees, and to get a summary of what is happening, to have proper budgetary oversight. So that is something that, and I think our committee section has been looking at that, and they do make reports, but I think the main thing that catches us is that it's just never time to give proper attention to some of these things, and with the shortage of resources as well. So Chair, I'm going to leave it at that. I mean, you mentioned consultation and sequencing.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, do you have anything to say?
Yeah. Thank you. I think colleagues have come. I just want to touch something quickly. Chair, the issue of transformation, I think the point, as I understand, to add on what Advocate Jenkins is saying, the budget is an expression of the policy, you know, or the aspiration of the country. And I think when I look at the Act, I mean, the Act empowers the legislature to ensure or to hold government accountable insofar as the budget does budget actually express aspiration of the country, the constitution, or whichever policy that would have put out there. And I think in my view, the sense is that the Act gives Parliament to actually make sure that is the case if government has not actually, if the sense that the budget has not expressed the wishes of society as a whole or some of the policies that were agreed back then and or some of the aspirations of what kind of society one should have in 30 years' time, whatever. So I think the budget ought to be doing that, but I think the Act does give Parliament that authority to make sure that is the case if it's not the case. So I think the Consumer Act that in the regard, as we've discussed it back then, as Kate was saying. Just one point, I think the PM, the five, the bringing of the annual report earlier, it's probably possible because the PFMA gives government 5 months to prepare the financial report for them. Yeah, I think that's all. Colleagues, another thing.
Okay, you're coming in. Yeah, TV.
Another thing.
The only thing I wanted to say is we also presented to the Appropriations Committee that the appropriation, that 40% that goes to the national department, they actually transfer 70%, almost 70% of that money to other institutions and to provinces. So that actually indicates the importance of these NCOP committees, because it's such a huge amount that of national, the national proportion, that are also spent on a provincial level. And the other thing that I wanted to say is, besides that transfer, provinces also have their own revenue. And I've been, for the last few years, I've assisted this committee, but we never looked at the budget of provincial departments. On a quarterly basis, we really did oversight and monitored expenditure, but we never looked at, we never analyzed the budget and compared different provinces with each other. So I don't know whether that will also fall in the function or role of these committees. And just my view in terms of the BRR reports, I personally think that BRR reports should be the vehicle of these, all our finance committees, to be able to amend the budget or make a recommendation to amend the budget. And the time is just too early, because we need them also to include the adjustments made and also to include the findings from the Auditor General. Because of the timeline for BRR reports, we missed those two documents and outcomes.
Yep.
Okay, next. So I've got comments on the again also on the specific role of the NCOP and then also on the issue of transformation, not only in terms of the role of the committee, but also organisations like the PBO, so that's something we struggle with, and I think Advocate Jenkins dealt with it very effectively. I just want to add one or two points to that. In the first one, I spent a bit of time earlier this year looking at the different reports of India's fiscal commissions, which happen every year, and made me think about sort of the nature of South Africa relative to how the Indian government and their very large states, provinces, some of which are as large as our country, and you know the fiscal commissions become this hugely influential and political. So it's not like our fiscal, finance and fiscal commission that's sort of an institution. It's something that gets set up with new people, new chair, and it also often represents the political nature of the leading party in the country. And you find that then states who have different leadership or different emphasis are very subtle, and they really then have to shift their budgets and also how they see their priorities linked to sometimes what the center wants. And I think to some extent we can learn from that in that how do different provinces and their specific needs, but also their different emphases in terms of priorities and how they see the development and dealing with socioeconomic problems in their provinces differ, even though we're much smaller and we deal with a lot of those issues at the national level. And I think the previous point about looking at the provincial budgets, maybe would inform that. But I think the NCOP's role is basically to say, well, I'm representing the interests of this province in this. And I shouldn't be telling members that they know that very clearly, but I think that that's usually important in adding to, I think, what the NA does in finalizing the NCDPS and the budget. So yeah, that may be a fairly obvious point, but I think I just thought I should reiterate. So on the transformation side, I mean, I think as Advocate Jenkins says, that we as advisors are very careful to be seen as non-partisan and supporting a policy position, even though many of us have our own views and feelings about policy. But again, I mean, there is clearly within the Constitution and within the Bill of Social Economic Rights, the Bold Rights, there's this idea that we do want to pursue a developmental path. And so I think there's an onus on us in doing that. I think one of the difficulties is that, and it's illustrated by the recent National Treasury discussion document, and then at the same similar time, the Department of Trade and Industry has an organization do scenarios and a report for them that came out with fairly different perspectives on at least the macro policies. And the National Treasury document basically didn't really address macro policy, and there's this assumption that the kind of macro policies we have in the country is supporting the stabilization of the country. The DPI document basically says that there needs to be much more integration of micro and macro, and the possibility of increasing expenditure and the level of debt. If you want to deal with debt to GDP, one way to deal with it is by increasing GDP because it's a ratio. That's a simple thing there. Now, in previous years, especially, I mean, for me, since I joined the PDO in 2016, it's been really hard for me to sort of decide how far I want to push within the PBO, also because I have a discussion with my colleagues and you may differ, but also then come into like a discussion on the NPDPS and the fiscal policy framework to say that, you know, how far do I want to disagree with what National Treasury is saying in terms of what is good for the country, stability and growth, and also what I may see as missing from their views, things like, do they take into account that South Africa is now usually integrated into a global financial system and the financial sector is the largest contributor to GDP, but also the largest contributor to instability. And so does keeping inflation at a certain level support the stability? And if you see what happened after the...
I know where you're going, and I'm agreeing with most of what you're saying. I'm not sure whether it's relevant.
No, no, my point is about how far do we go as advisors? And I suppose the question then is, we probably need feedback from this government. And I think that's a hugely important example because it may show that, you know, there are things that there are lines that we have set up for ourselves as advisors that we keep scared to cross because
Firstly, can I make something clear? You're independent. How you manage your internal differences is something that the advisory board can look at. And I think all of you should come to an advisory board meeting at some stage. That's my view, with the other people. We have a discussion with you, so that all of you can speak your mind. Not just the three of you who are here. I have no doubt that you come from different traditions within the economic and financial fields and whatever else it is that you have expertise on. So you will have your differences. How you come here and present a PBO point of view, I don't know. Well, it's really operate like a structure where I understood the majority of you prevailed and you bring that here. But I don't see the problem, personally. I'm not sure what the other three chairs will think and the two house chairs. Why it cannot be said, look, this is the majority view and there are other views. Because the idea is that you give independent opinion. That's my view. But this is not the view necessarily of the advisory board or the committee. So I think the first issue is to discuss this matter within the advisory board. Then we can bring it here. The advisory board may have a role in regard to that. Secondly, think that my view is nobody should be prevented from expressing a point of view. And collectively, nothing stops you from being critical about Treasury's thing. That surprises me, sir. In fact, we've been asking you to do that. The problem may be within your folks, that you can't agree and you don't have consensus. But we always tell you to speak your mind. Certainly in the Finance Committee, we've never, ever said to you, restrain yourself. And personally, I think that Treasury is good and bad, right? And, you know, we've got to acknowledge its strengths, but also tackle its weaknesses. But I think this is a matter that the new advisory board must discuss. And it's something that you can bring to the committees. But then we should do it jointly as four committees. Instead of having one view from the Finance Committee on this side, another view that side, put it on the agenda. Go to the chairpersons there, two of them, particularly the chairperson of Finance, and get a date early in the next quarter. Let's do it. Okay. In the meanwhile, I would recommend to the advisory board, particularly will be there, that this is what was raised with us and the matter that needs to be considered. Okay. Next thing very quickly is responding to Comrade Zolani. Look, man, firstly, the way I see it, right, it's something we can discuss further. What here are the tools to make transformation possible? They're the tools, the means. That is why we talk of a procedure. So, this is not the content, it's the means to achieve a goal. That's the first point. The second point is, in our reports to Parliament, we do talk about transformation. In fact, we talk too much about transformation. We don't deliver on it. Every report is about transformation. You can get the Committee Secretary, Alan Wickham, to send you the National Assembly Finance Committee reports for the last 5 years. It's all about transformation. The problem is neither the MPs, nor the executive, nor the civil servants do the job we're supposed to do. Thirdly, you see, the thing is that even if you get a very progressive, transformative government that's, let's say, left-wing, it will still have to observe these things. You just have to take into account inflation. You might have a different view about inflation targeting, but you have to take account of inflation. You might have a different view of budget surpluses, but you have to look at budget surplus. You might have a different view about debt to GDP ratio, but you still have to look at it. So these are tools. And finally, there's a whole lot of legislation and policy that we've passed in this parliament from 1994 to effect transformation. We have failed dismally to do it. My own view is, you know what? The issue isn't legislation or words on a paper. Once again, let's be transformed. The issue is implementation and delivery. That's where we failed dismally. That includes us as the ANC. In fact, it includes us mainly, in my view, because we are the majority party. That's what it's about. Okay. So, can we now realize that we've got other items on the agenda? This is an ongoing discussion, but we're taking charge of and fun.
Chair, I just want to make a thank you very much. I just want to make a simple point on this discussion, Chair. I think earlier mentioned in terms of how the NCOP, in terms of playing an effective and efficient role in terms of having representing the interests of provinces on the budget in the MTBPS. I think Chair, to do things different, I think the point that was raised on the analysis of provinces for us in terms of the role of provinces and what provinces are doing and then how they are spending their budget.
Yeah.
I think would be very important for the committee to know so that we know exactly in terms of the applications that we are making in terms of how provinces are spending their money, so that it will assist us when we come to this process of the budget as to how we are able to influence that process in terms of representing the interests of the provinces. So, Chairman, I think it's something that I would bring to the table to say that we have to look at that point as to how do we change the problem in terms of looking more how provinces are operating.
Yeah. Okay, we've discussed this before. Just to remind colleagues, there is a provincial legislature which has a finance committee and an appropriations committee, and they overlook this thing. Firstly, there is a provincial MEC for finance and a department, right? Then there is the NCOP, all of us must play our respective roles without again duplicating, firstly. Secondly, it's the Appropriations Committee, once again, that must do that. It's looking at expenditure. But we agree with you. It's something that what Advocate Jenkins is saying is there. It's actually in the Bill Act. We don't do it. We don't do it. So it's a matter I think we need to raise when the Appropriations Committee comes with the program for the next year. Okay, over to Fani.
But you're right, Comrade Nizami.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I strongly believe that the focus must rather be put on the corruption being rooted out instead of transformation. We've been transforming for the past 25 years. Everything is in place according to what people wanted it to be. I believe that we must rather focus on rooting out corruption. That's my
Okay, thank you. All right, then can we move on because we need to vote.
We need to vote quickly on a few things. Firstly, on the 3rd of September, have we got a quorum? The declared leaves we have, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, okay. No, it's fine. We've got a quorum. Yeah, okay. We've got a quorum. That's right. So, basically, look, colleagues, firstly, on the 3rd of September, you said to you on Friday, any changes you want to make? No, nope. Is there a mover and a seconder, please? Okay, we don't have a mover and a seconder, we'll have to discuss it tomorrow then.
Thank you, Chair, I will read.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Ryder's seconding. On the 10th of September, any issues? I went through these minutes as well, I checked them. Yeah, I think it's fine, but you know I've missed it.
Yeah, Chair. Okay, so can you share a movie?
Okay, seconder? Okay, thank you. After the traditional leader has his word, nobody can. Coming on to that. Okay, Select Committee report. I also looked at this. I think it's fine. Mover and seconder, please. Okay, there's no mover and seconder. We'll put the item back on the agenda. Okay, thank you. All right, then the next issue is the program, am I right? The draft program is with you. There's nothing there. Lastly, it emerges from looking at workshops. And these are routine things. In other words, you know we block off. We block off a whole 2 week period based on the NTBPS cycle. Okay? So the question then is, ignoring that 2 week cycle, well, we cannot change that. Is there anything else you want to change? No, this is just a draft. There may be ideas that occur to us, or something explodes in the media that may warrant us changing, then we can change things. There's nobody who's cast a diamond in the future. We have made changes before and we can. It's a bad two-week period we can't change. Yes, Mr. Ryder.
Chair, just a question. I was going through the program a few days ago. I noted that there was a week set aside for committee oversight work. I don't see any allowance for that, or we just carry on as business as usual?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was told by the committee manager section that we have to do something about that. Now, they've changed the date of the NTBPS. So we will look into that, the committee secretary and I, but we must go, where possible, on tours of the provinces, especially the NTOP. So I think that's our priority. But the finance committee has been given exemption and they approach 2 times a year, around the time of the budget and the NTBPS, because that is legally necessary. The country will come to a standstill and finish. So provided it doesn't clash, we will go to Gauteng, I think it's correct. Again, Gauteng, is that right? Yeah. And we are meeting tomorrow afternoon to discuss that. Am I right? Or is there a meeting tomorrow? No. Or just the chairs that have been brought together there. The chairs have to be there. All right, so we will come back to you next week about the matter. Nkululeko, can you just look into this thing, right? So that, can we agree our priority is to go to the province, right? But if it clashes with finishing the NTBPS, then obviously we can't. The Finance Committee won't have a problem. I think the Appropriations Committee, because they're... Am I right, Esther? Usually in the third, fourth quarter, the Appropriations Committee doesn't go. Am I right? Or so we're unlikely to go. Am I right, Esther? Or do you go, Mommy? Because he's new, he wouldn't go.
No, we don't
go. Okay. The fourth quarter and first quarter, we don't go. Second and third quarters, we go. Is that right, Esther? We don't normally go to the province.
We used to do oversight, but then...
No, no, I mean as part of the overall NCOP business. Do you see? Our own visits are only in the next quarter. I'm talking about, you know, the whole NCOP goes, going to the people program. That is towards the third week of November, right? So what I'm saying is, do the appropriations committees...
Okay, the answer is no.
No.
Because finance may be finished, but
appropriations is not. Yeah, it's unlikely. But the second and third quarter, we can go with the whole of the NCOP. Okay, Dennis, unless we can't go, we will go, but it's unlikely given the situation. Especially also because MTBP has got postponed by a week. Okay, thank you all. Is there anything else? Oh, we have to move a second there and on the draft program. Yeah, good. Anything else? No. Okay, a round of applause for the chairperson. We finished 50 minutes before time. Can the co-chairperson see to it that she does that tomorrow? Thank you.
Minister, that's a very point I'm making. Now that she's done, we are. Copy up.